Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition Monster Manual from 1977. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in it, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. We've got two monsters today. In fact, one of them's not really a monster, but I'm still confident we're going to find plenty to say. Before we get started, though, it's time to thank some new patrons. Yes, these are the people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if, like today's patrons, you pledge at the $2 level or higher, you'll also get access to my new show, Patron Deities, in which I take longer, kind of deep dives into the Deities and Demigods supplement. Today, I have the special pleasure of being able to thank three good friends of mine, Fran Bleach, Stephen Fleetwood, and Roger Kennedy. Thank you all very much for supporting the show. With that out of the way, let's talk about some monsters. Well, honestly, our first encounter here isn't a monster. It is the mule. Now, I have a great deal of attachment to the mule in Dungeons & Dragons. I've often said that you gotta be a little bit careful about the extent to which you include mounts and other animals in your Dungeons & Dragons game, because you can wind up doing a lot of bookkeeping about them for not really a huge amount of reward. But if you're going to include, you know, the requirement that the adventurers get something to carry all their swag on, I think a mule is an excellent choice, largely because it is the kind of thing that an old-timey prospector would have, and the greater the extent to which Dungeons & Dragons characters resemble old-timey prospectors, the happier I am. Also, mules are stubborn, mules are ornery, and if you're in charge of a group of mules, you are called a mule skinner. All of these things are great. So yeah, mules, an excellent addition to a D&D game in my view. Now let's get to the real meat of the episode. I'm talking, of course, about the mummy. Now, the mummy is an interesting creature. We don't actually have too many of these so far. We've seen a lot of creatures from mythology and folklore. We've seen a lot of creatures. We've seen some creatures from fantasy fiction. We haven't seen too many of those. We've only really seen one kind of horror movie monster in the form of the werewolf, unless you're willing to accept that the Lokotha are like the creature from the Black Lagoon. So fiction about mummies goes back really, I mean, I am not an expert, but I have been to conferences where experts talked, so this is all kind of secondhand stuff that I've picked up from there, and so if I make any mistakes in this, they're my mistakes, not the mistakes of the people whose work I'm hopefully going to cite in the show notes, or at least on the Patreon post. So the fascination with mummies goes back to a kind of 19th century, and maybe even very late 18th century, fascination with Egypt. This is around the time that Egyptian texts are being translated, thanks to the deciphering of hieroglyphs, and mummies are, you know, coming more and more to, like, appear in museums, and there are even sort of public mummy unwrappings. Now, you'll sometimes see these referred to as mummy unwrapping parties. I don't know if they're really parties per se. They're sort of public events. And you start to get fiction in which mummies appear. But initially, they appear more as sort of ghosts, you know, as tragic reminders of a forgotten past, or indeed as being vengeful. But I think the idea of the punishing, destructive mummy really comes around kind of in the 20s. And that, of course, is associated with the idea of the curse of King Tut, right? That the idea that, you know, when you're digging up the past, you are desecrating a tomb. This goes back to a fundamental metaphor that underlies archaeological horror, and that is also really important for horror-themed Dungeons & Dragons, and that is the metaphor of the underground. We associate up and down with a lot of things, and those concepts kind of overlap. So up is the world of life, of the present, and of wakefulness, and the underworld is the world of death, of the past, and of dream. We wake up, but we fall asleep, for example. And archaeologists are people who dig up the past. And we have a sense that, you know, as we say, there are some things better left buried. And so the mummy acts as an agent in many ways that punishes the hubris of characters who defile its tomb. So there's some sense that even though, you know, we don't share the religious beliefs of the mummy, that it is somehow wrong to violate its resting place and bring it home as a sort of curiosity. And there is often a character in mummy films who first acts to warn you not to violate the tomb, and then acts as an agent of punishment. And following the Universal mummy, the Boris Karloff mummy, we get this very standard trope of the mummy as kind of an unstoppable, rampaging monster, but often one that still has ties to its past in the form of, like, recognizing a character, you know, as a reincarnation of some ancient Egyptian person, usually a romantic interest of some kind. And then I feel like in modern mummy films, we've moved away from the lumbering basher into one where the mummy tends to be more personalized. And you can see that in the kind of Brendan Fraser mummy films where, you know, the mummy is not some lurching figure swathed in bandages, but, you know, just like a character full of magical powers. And I think a lot of modern depictions of mummies in role-playing games have tended to move in that direction, giving them sort of sorcerous abilities. This is both good and bad. I mean, certainly it's interesting to see the mummy as, you know, less just kind of a lurching agent of vengeance and more as a developed character with its own goals and agendas. But ultimately, this does kind of have the problem that it winds up sort of sharing the same conceptual space as the other intelligent undead villains, the Lich and the Vampire. And the Vampire certainly, at least, I think, has a little more mind share than the Mummy. So the unstoppable rampaging Mummy is maybe more of the kind of mummy that's suitable for a Dungeons & Dragons game. But of course, as I said earlier, I feel like this metaphor definitely applies to D&D games, right? I mean, the idea that you're, you know, digging down underground to violate the tomb of some ancient monarch in hopes of finding golden treasures there, well, that very much describes a lot of 19th and early 20th century archaeology, right? In fact, there are a lot of Dungeons & Dragons campaigns that you could run easily just with the idea that the player characters are archaeologists. You know, some of them might be more focused on treasure hunting, and some of them might be more focused on getting things back to the museum and studying them properly, but it would work quite neatly. And the mummy, you know, in some ways represents anxiety about the role of, I mean, Britain in particular, in colonialism. You know, the idea that, you know, the characters who are being pursued by the mummy, you know, I gotta confess that I don't really recall the Universal Mummy so well. I have seen it. But, like in the Hammer Mummy films, it's often some sense that the characters who are being chased by the mummy are actually kind of guilty, you know, that there is some sin, some thing that they're being punished for, that there is some kind of justice in the mummy's cause. And again, I mean, I think that's a pretty frequent trope in writing about Dungeons & Dragons, that, you know, in fact, the monsters can be often conceived of as the good guys, and here's a bunch of goons breaking into their underground lair just to try and rob them. And of course, a mummy's tomb fulfills one of the great things about a dungeon, which is when you have a structure that was built for one purpose that is now being used as, for another one. So it's actually a royal tomb, but a bunch of bandits are layering in it. Or, you know, it's actually a royal tomb, but the owlbears have made their nest in it, or whatever it might be. So you actually have these multiple layers of different monsters interacting with or competing against each other, or even that the bandits in the upper lair can fulfill the role of that guy in the Mummy movie who goes, "The men will go no further today. They say this place is cursed." And then your players get to scoff and say, criminals are a superstitious and cowardly lot. The mummy in the Monster Manual as it stands is pretty much the brute avenger of your Universal or Hammer films. And if you really wanted to go the full mummy movie, you would accompany him with some kind of necromancer or evil high priest, or just regular high priest, frankly, because mummies have low intelligence, and they're often, in mummy films, they're often kind of guided by this character in a fez who almost uses them like a bomb, right? He brings the mummy back to England in many cases and unleashes it on the people who he thinks have violated the sanctity of the tomb. And then the mummy has its own weird agenda where it recognizes a reincarnated princess, blah, blah, blah. So the idea that the mummy is some kind of object of cult veneration, but that the person who is doing that sort of has an agenda that is not quite the same as the mummy's itself, is an interesting one and another way in which the mummy makes a good monster. And in a stand-up fight, the mummy is pretty rugged. You know, causes fear and revulsion, so frightening that you're paralyzed, which is a good explanation for why people aren't able to run away from this lumbering goof. It punches for D12 damage, which is a lot of damage for five across the eyes. And it can affect you with mummy rot, which not only can scar you and lower your charisma, but actually prevents cure wound spells from working until someone drops a cure disease on you. It takes damage from fire, takes damage from holy water, and I do like the very specific, like, anticipation of players being a bunch of clever clogs. What happens if you cast Raise Dead on a mummy? And which is that, in fact, it comes back to life, but as a 7th level fighter, so you better hope there aren't any, like, kopeshes and shields and things in this tomb, or else now the pharaoh is just gonna beat the stuffing out of you, only he's alive. Clever, though. So there's just a lot of possibilities in the mummy as a monster, and I think the, you know, ancient Egyptian tomb theme is one that is kind of, like, corny by now. I mean, it was big in the 20s and 30s, so, you know, by now it's been interpreted and reinterpreted so many times that I think everybody's kind of aware of it, and there's no surprises in a mummy film, right? It's that inevitability horror, not twist horror. But I do think that it's so recognizable, and there are so many other relevant types of creatures in the Monster Manual that you could include in it, that, you know, mummies remain a pretty sound antagonist, one I think players enjoy fighting. And I guess maybe the only problem is that the fire thing is sufficiently well understood that, you know, that's just where the players are going to go round one, right? Although I do note that the mummy in the Monster Manual, compared to some of its modern counterparts, is only vulnerable to fire in the sense that fire attacks actually do damage to it. So it's still a pretty good, you know, it's still a pretty good slugger. And just to put the icing on the cake, it's got a very nice Dave Trompier illustration that, I mean, in fairness, looks exactly like what you'd think it would look like. It's just a mummy coming on out of his sarcophagus. I don't feel like I necessarily have a lot to say about this other than that, because it's just such a classic horror movie monster, and one where, kind of unlike a vampire, the horror of it translates very well into a Dungeons & Dragons scenario, simply because, first, it fits well into a supernatural world. So, you know, part of the vampire thing is that, you know, no one will believe you that this guy's a vampire, whereas I think in D&D, you know, everybody's pretty hip to the idea that there are vampires, whereas the thing in The Mummy is, you know, that it's mad at you specifically. And of course, because so much of Dungeons & Dragons gameplay centers around tomb robbing. I mean, it couldn't be more tailor-made to have your PCs pursued by a mummy. So yeah, that's it for the M monsters. In our next episode, we're going to push on into the next chapter, and we're going to take a look at the Naga, the Neo-Otiug, and the Night Hag. So join me then for the next episode of Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory, or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods Advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.